I'm going to go ahead and call this session to order at 6:49. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the board in regards to closed session items? No, seeing none, we're going to adjourn to closed session for a short time, and then we will come back for the general meeting. Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is currently 7:02 p.m. You can all please stand for the invocation. Is anyone in the audience like to offer the invocation? Okay, seeing none, we're going to have Ms. Poulos lead us.
Dear Lord, be with us this evening as we make the decisions that affect the students in our district and the staff. And we want to say a special thank you for all the students here tonight that participated in the decathlon, and a special blessing on all of the students in this district. And please keep all of them safe on their way home this evening. In his name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Amanda Jimenez.
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
Mrs. Polis.
Here.
Mr. Cox.
Here.
Mr. Spence.
Here.
Madam, Captain Richard Seaman.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, the report of action taken in closed session. It was moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Mr. Cox and approved to expel the following pupil from the schools of the district. Pupil number 202030, Education Code 48900JK. The expellable offense is possession of a drug paraphernalia. It was 4 votes yes, 1 absent. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in his rehabilitation plans. Okay, also in closed session, the board unanimously voted to direct the superintendent or her designee to serve notices of release from the temporary employment under Education Code 44954 to the following certificated employees. Employee ZZ2188654, employee HK3149001, employee GM2474999, employee DV98030013, employee KQ705483, employee ZP23863007, employee MX4219277, and finally employee XX9524097. Thank you for your patience, everyone. Okay, we'd like to note that Ms. Manahan has joined us. Thank you. It's good to have you. And we'd like to have we're going to have a special presentation today, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Seaman.
Yes, we're privileged today to have the West Covina High School Academic Decathlon, and I'd like Principal Alex Rubicava to come to the podium.
Good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here to recognize another aspect of West Covina High School's academic program. We've been here before, and we've celebrated our success on the field in terms of football. And I can't forget wrestling. Girls won state champions again.
Oh, wow.
This is second year in a row, so a big kudos to them. I'm sorry, Megan. I hope I didn't steal your thunder. I'm sure that was part of your report, too. But obviously, our main purpose at the high school is preparing our kids academically for their future. And one of the programs that is very, very successful, as is evident by the students that are here today, is our academic decathlon team. And I want to make sure that I do justice, so I want to make sure that I recognize especially the adults that help our students and coach our students to be so successful. So I'm going to ask Mr. Fred Myers to come up, introduce his team, and also speak to you a little bit about the program. There are other individuals involved as well that help Mr. Myers with the preparation of the students, and I hope he'll mention them as well. So, Mr. Myers.
Okay.
This year, our topic for academic decathlon was Age of Imperialism. Sorry. I've had a brain dump. It's Age of Imperialism. And so it's basically the main point was the European colonization of the rest of the world, leading up to the American colonies and the post-colonial time after the United States was formed. They study 10 different subjects, and they go and they compete for 2 days, and then, of course, we get our team scores and our medals. We have with us today Cecilia Vu. We have Cheyenne Barba. We have Andrea Savis. We have Martin Vigil. We have Julia Chen. Should be valedictorian at the high school this year.
Wow. Yeah.
We have Cyrus Wan. And hiding in the back, showing up just a little bit late, we have Joanna Lemus. We have two other... Thank you. We have two other students that do compete, but they couldn't be here tonight. So whatever. Their names are Peter Shipman and Janine Calderon. There we go. As far as assistance, the only person that really helps me or that's helping me this year, my wife drove for 2 days.
Wow.
She also works at the high school. She teaches Spanish. But I needed an extra driver this year, and she helped me out with the driving.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of the Board of Education, we'd like to present a special certificate. So if the students can come over here, that way parents can get good photos. Okay, and your teachers can join you. I'm going to go ahead and present the certificate.
Okay.
I think that while everybody's getting ready, if you don't mind, I want to also make sure that we acknowledge the parents that support this program. Our PTSA actually is new for this year, but they participated in the academic decathlon. They were trained. They actually helped do some of the judging for
wow.
the students as well. And so that was a great experience for them, and I know they shared back that they really appreciated being there. So I know overall it was a great experience for not only students but also for adults.
On behalf of the Board of Education, we'd like to recognize your outstanding achievement of the 2012 Academic Decathlon team. Congratulations to you all. Go ahead and hold that for your photos, and parents, go ahead. Do you want to go on to your other side?
I'm going to make it, I'm going to unbalance it on one
there
side.
Thank you again, everyone, and congratulations. We'll take a moment so that if you all want to go ahead and leave so that you don't have to stay for the rest of the meeting, that way you can leave freely. Thank you. You too. Congratulations.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask. Oh, I was going to ask her what her grade point average is.
Oh.
I don't know. I didn't know where that came from. It's kind of weird. Okay.
No, that's okay.
Really
and
if
I was just concerned that you broke.
You'd be an idiot.
And if we had been over your report, we were going to come back to you when you got
there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'm going to have to early.
No problem. Just give your report and then go ahead and go. Okay? We're happy to have you here. Thank you. No, you're okay.
So, yeah.
Until you die. College is crazy. Then you start a career. Then you have kids. And you try to balance it all. So it's okay. You're doing good.
And then you get old and die.
That's what I told her. Right? Didn't I? That's exciting.
Something to look forward to.
So, yeah. Just find the things you like and make sure to plug them in.
Okay. I don't have anything to report today. Does anyone on the board have anything that they would like to report? Ms. Poulos?
I was able to go to the Edgewood Alumni Day, and it was a very nice turnout, and everybody was so pleasant there. And everybody who put in the work to make the day so successful, I really want to thank them because it was quite lovely. And it, I had a lot of fun, but I didn't have to do any of the work. But I did, so I appreciate all of those who put the day together because it was wonderful. And hopefully they're going to start doing regular things to help raise money for Edgewood.
Any reports?
There was a... I was going to say maybe 300.
Wow, that's a great turnout. Anybody on this side? No. Miss Manahan.
I have a report for Edgewood and West Covina tonight. For Edgewood, their academics, they are holding their parent conferences next Wednesday from 5 o'clock to 7:30. And the first marking for their grading period ends this Friday. They're still working to build their relationship with their alumni association. So as Ms. Poulos just stated, they had their homecoming, and they said there are amazing speeches and performances, tables of memorabilia, tours of the entire school, and a rededication of the Trojan mural. They said it was an incredible experience that created a sense of unity between former and current Edgewood High School students. They also are continuing their production of The Wiz, which is a production held between districts and between schools. So there's many different students involved in that. And they've begun rehearsal for their second play of the year, Romeo and Juliet, which I know they're very, very excited for. And their swim, tennis, baseball, and softball seasons have officially begun. And their Interact is continually fundraising for their Relay for Life, which will be held at their school. For West Covina, we're focusing on the KC, so they're having KC interventions for math after school this week, and they're also administering the writing part of the early assessment program for college for CSUs and CCCs for the juniors. And our teachers are working with Cal Poly Pomona to provide workshops for our senior English teachers so that we can prepare the students for college level English. As far as our activities go, February 22nd, our newspaper is officially online. So we're very, very proud of them for that. It's really exciting. They have videos up and articles, and it's really cool, really exciting. I think there's only a couple in the nation, I think, so that's pretty cool. This past weekend, our step squad went to Nationals in Vegas, and they got third place, so we're proud of them for that. And our dance drill and all-male programs also got multiple first places this past weekend.
Wow.
So we're celebrating them, as well as our wrestling team, as Principal Rubikava stated. And our drumline is hosting their annual ADLA drumline show this Saturday, so... As always, the board is welcome to participate with that. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, this part of our agenda is when we take comments from the floor, and we ask that you limit your comments to 5 minutes, and it's not a Q&A session. It's just the opportunity to hear from the public. So I'd like to call Art Ballin, please.
Good evening, Mrs. Jimenez and board members. My name is Art Ballin, and I'm the president of West Covina Youth Soccer. I've been the president for approximately the last 14 years, and I know that some of our members were here at our last meeting to voice their concerns of what's happening over at Edgewood. I just want to point, first of all, say thank you very much for allowing us to utilize Edgewood for the last 20 years. We've been there for 20 years, approximately. We've been involved with the city for since 1969. So some of you are not aware, or I should say a lot of you are not aware of how long we've been in the city. But we've been at Edgewood for the last 20 years, so I wanted to thank you for that. What I wanted to emphasize to you is that we can coexist over at Edgewood. And it's been emphasized to me, it seems like, as though they feel that we can't coexist, and we can. The sports usually complete their sports activities at the school approximately between 5 and 5:30. And that's usually the time when our activities or our programs there have started. So we have a dilemma, of course. It's nothing that I'm sure we're going to get through, but it just makes it tough when you have half of your fields taken away from you. There's been other sites that they brought up to replace those sites, but it's very difficult, especially when you have multiple kids playing in our league, which we do. For you to be at two places at the same time, it's just physically not possible to do that. So it's difficult for our family members to be jumping from one school to the next. So I just wanted to say that we definitely want to let you know that we support Mr. Avatori's program, sports program. I want to make sure that you're clear about that. We definitely support their program. I think it's essential to have a sports program in any high school. It's part of the growth. But I just want you to keep in mind that our youth programs are very important to the youth development, from social skills to competing, to learn how to compete. It's just very essential. And it's disappointing sometimes that there's times that I feel that we just don't have the support sometimes. We get it a lot from the city, and I know it's difficult because there is just not enough real estate in the city of West Covina to actually accommodate our needs. I mean, we basically need the size of the field that you have at Edgewood or at West Covina. But I just want to point out that West Covina is a good example of how the youth programs could coexist. I mean, West Covina High School has a lot of youth programs that use their site and coexist with our programs. Our visiting cities that we visit constantly do that as well. As far as the fields that we use, we're on fields or outfields of baseball fields to utilize whatever space that's available. So I just wanted to let you know that our league definitely supports the program that Mr. Avatori is trying to implement over at Edgewood. So I want to make sure you're clear of that, because I'm sure at our last meeting there was a lot of people that were disappointing. But we do definitely support the sports program, as we have in the past. I've probably been through about five administrations, and those administrations, we've been working very close together, and we had a good working relationship. And I know there's a process of learning when a new administration takes over. And I just haven't felt that with this administration. I've met and I've talked to the administration, and it's just a little bit tough. It's just frustrating for my end of it, because now I got 1,700 kids to deal with and half the facility to play them at. So, again, thank you for your time, and thank you for allowing us to use the Edgewood site for 20 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your comments, Mr. Ballin. We appreciate you coming out to speak to us. Thank you.
Mr. Ballin, I think it's feeling from your members that they were against the program at the school. Actually, I thought some of them made it very clear that they were supportive of the sport programs there. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if there was some communication that somehow we communicate that. I didn't get that feeling from them at all. Even talking to him here and afterwards, I didn't get that feeling at all. Just so you know, I didn't feel that.
From our members or from the students?
From your members.
From your members.
Yeah, I didn't feel like they, you know, were against the sports program there or anything like that. It wasn't communicated. That's not what I felt.
And I'm glad that was the case. So, I heard secondhand. I was out of the country. I got emails, so. And it seemed like some of them got a little bit frustrated. And
yeah, I didn't
it's
get
just that. From being in the city for this long, and we've been bounced around. I mean, started over at Walmart.
Yeah.
We went over to Orangewood, we went to Willowwood, and like I said, Edgewood's been our home for the last 20 years, and we appreciate that, don't get me wrong. We're all volunteers, none of us get paid. It's an essential program, an after-school program, and if anybody knows how important after-school programs, it should be the people in this room. And I just hate to see it come to an end. It's basically what I'm worried about. Because there's no physical way that the city is going to supply us a field in the near future. And when I say near future, a year or 2 years, whatever the case might be, it's just, there's not enough of an area that would accommodate the size of our need other than the school grounds. And that's one of the reasons why Edgewood has made our home for the last 20 years. And we've always supported it. And, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but we actually maintain the fields as well.
Yeah.
Out of our budget, we cut the grass, we seed the grass, we hit the fence up. Unfortunately, the field's in the bad condition that it is right now, because I wasn't allowed to put the fence up for the last 2 years. Had that been the case, you would have a nice green field across the street. But we pay that, and our parents come out and physically I cut the grass, myself included, just like any other league that's involved in cities. It's all volunteers.
And we appreciate that. I just don't want you to think that we had the idea, because I didn't get that at all.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because we have a good relationship with the school district.
Right, yeah.
It's unfortunate that, to me, it's been emphasized that we can't coexist, and I believe that we can coexist. I've seen good. I've coached high school. I've played the sports in high school. There's no reason why our youth program couldn't come after their sports programs they're there after their practice, after their games, and utilize the sites.
What's the issue, though, with baseball fields being different than soccer fields at all?
We don't practice on top of the baseball field. We use the outside.
But the safety zone because of the balls or something.
You don't want baseball being.
Yeah, so wasn't that the issue?
I totally agree. Okay. And what you're referring to is they allowed a league from Walmart to come up, or a pony league to utilize the field. Right, yeah. They have a permit from Monday through Saturday there.
And is that what prevents you from using those fields?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So now, it's not our sports program that prevents it. It's a
no. Basically, according to I was told that they wanted to preserve the fields.
Right.
You don't preserve the fields by bringing another team in. Kids that are 16 or 17 with steel spikes. I mean, the kids that play in that area are basically 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-, 8-, 9-year-olds with rubber cleats. They do not damage fields. The older kids wearing steel spikes, they're the ones that basically damage the field.
So you weren't playing on the area that's used as the baseball field?
Yes, they were.
We utilize that for practice sites, and we use that for our games.
Okay, well, that's not a problem? I just got you.
Well, no, we don't
no,
do
they
it together.
They don't get to now.
You got to remember, they just started the program now.
Right, yeah. Okay.
We wouldn't be there at the same time they're there.
But you'd be on the baseball field.
Exactly. Once they're done and they finish their practice, finish their games, we would come on, just like we do at other sites, at other schools. Okay. They would come in after their practice, after their games, and utilize those fields. That's basically we wouldn't do it at the same time. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the organizational section of the meeting. For the approval of the agenda and consent items, do I have a motion? Who will move it?
I need to remove number 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Are there any to remove?
Which
one? Number 2.
And with that, I'll move as amended.
Anybody else have any? 12?
12.
Any others to remove from consent? Nope. Okay. So we are going to go ahead and remove 2 from consent as well as 12 from consent. Okay, and Ms. Shoemaker has indicated that she will move that. Is there a second?
No, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Okay, so it was moved by Ms. Shoemaker, seconded by Mr. Cox, to approve the agenda and consent items for the regular meeting of February 28th, 2012. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, item number 2.
I just removed this because I will abstain from voting since I was not at the meeting.
Yeah, I move approval.
Oh, second. Abstain from voting
yeah,
for?
Yeah, number 2, yeah.
Okay.
I move approval.
So it'll be moved by, I'm sorry, who is going to move number 2?
I did. I moved the approval
okay,
of those
thank
minutes.
You.
Seconded.
By Steve Cox. Okay, all those in favor to approve the minutes of the regular meeting of February 14th as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? You're opposed?
Not opposed.
Abstaining. I'm sorry. All those in abstention? Okay, so there's 1. So 4 ayes and the 1 abstention is Ms. Shoemaker. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item number 7, please, Mr. Seaman.
I'd like to call on Mrs. Valentine for this item in the presentation.
Good morning. Good evening. Afternoon. Good evening, I'm sorry. Not
one of those meetings.
Not in China.
No. I'm very pleased to introduce Mrs. Taylor tonight. She has some really wonderful news to share about our English learner achievement.
Do you have this camera? No, that's mine, right?
I'm at the top of the door.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to come before you this evening, so thank you very much. It's my pleasure to present the Title III update for you all. About 3 years ago, we came to you and had to inform you that we had not met our goals as a district for English learners, particularly in the area of mathematics and English language development, of growing developing the English language in an adequate amount of time, which is the state had identified as 5 years
at the time 5 years or less. We had to write an improvement plan, which we brought before and which the board approved, and we've had to update the state at quarterly reports to tell them what we're doing and how we're progressing in our report, in our progress of implementation of the plan. The highlights of the plan, one of the items you might remember, is we adjusted summer school so that we no longer had a summer session for our English learners, but provided a jump start into school so that students had been away from the schooling, had the opportunity to become, again, immersed in English, familiar with the language, and being able to kind of, in a sense, hit the ground running. We also, in the last while, had implemented thinking maps, particularly with English learners in mind, in providing ways for students to have a way to graphically demonstrate their knowledge if they did not necessarily have the written or oral language. We also invited East LA Classic, which is a theater group, which provided a different mode for students to be able to participate in the reading, writing, listening, and speaking aspects in a theatrical way to lower their anxiety and opportunities to allow them to shine. We also had professional-focused development, particularly around academic vocabulary and research-based instructional strategies at each site that then were implemented across the district, and, of course, monitoring that student data. And I also want to say really much of this was with the support of the district site administrators ensuring that these plans were being implemented. So as of October's CBEDS numbers, you'll note how many percentage-wise of EL students. So at our first school, California, 18% of the student body at the October CBEDS, 18% of them were identified as English learners. You'll note West Cove at 25%. If you compared past year's data, you would note that. You have to remember many of our students who come in as English learners are primarily at the primary grades, and because it's a primary center, their numbers did increase just because of the nature of now the program. And so we span between 4% to 25% as of CBEDS. With a focus of providing good first instruction to our English learners, out of that percentage, if you look at the previous chart, starting with California, 43% of the student population is in current reclassification. So there was a supplemental chart, and you'll see English learners, obviously, because enrollment fluctuates day to day, we take a picture at a monthly at a glance, which you are already you were provided with that chart in front of you as well. And so approximately, if you look at the last one, 43% of the students at California for English learners are being redesignated, with the highest school of redesignation being 50% of their EL population at Walnut Grove. So the students have, or the teachers and the administration really has been focusing on supporting students in obtaining English so that they can redesignate in their program. So if you look at the comparison, and I'll use California just because it's the first school and it's easy to see. At the beginning of the school year for CBEDS, 18% of the student population was an English learner. At the end, as soon as they're finished with all of their redesignation process and we have everything documented, the population will drop to 10%. So that is happening currently right now. Some of them are still in their 60-day review. But that'll be finalized shortly. So you can see from, you know, Monta Vista, 24% will go down to 17%. So you can see the fluctuation that happens on a campus at any given time with how they have to know exactly who their students are, where they're performing, and able to support them in their development, whether they're an English learner, whether at that redesignation level, or they've now moved into what we call fluent and will no longer be receiving services. With that, this is our next portion of data, and this is the federal, there's three targets, which they call Annual Measurable Achievement Objectives, or AMAO. Number one has to do with, did you grow one band? So if I was a beginner, the next year I'm expected to be an early intermediate, and the following year I'd be expected to be an intermediate, so one band a year. The target that is set is 56%. The white is the previous year, the red is this current year, and you can see just the significance of the number of students percentage that grew one band. And the schools not only just be with their targeted interventions, but they really believe the jump start and moving summer school basically to the beginning of the start of the year really made a significant difference because the self is given in the fall. And so unlike the CST where it's the end of your schooling, The SELT is given at the beginning of the school year. And so it gave the students an opportunity to really kind of practice what they had learned the previous year to be able to apply it to the current assessment. AMAO2 has to do with obtaining English in a specific amount of time. As I stated in the beginning, is when we first went into the Title III program improvement, it was one cohort. It was just whether or not you made English in at the five-year span. They actually divided that into two cohorts. So cohort one, that's a mouthful, has to do with less than 5 years. The target for cohort one is 20%, because not every student that comes in their first year is a beginner. So there is an anticipation that 20% of that student population would obtain English with less than 5 years. And as I said, the goal was 20%, and this past year we made 35% of our students that had been in the program for less than 5 years were considered proficient. For cohort two, this is what we considered our long-term or our lifers, the people that have been in just longer than the 5 years. And, of course, those are our focus. We really don't want students to have to be in that population. The target was 45.1% to meet. That's the federal minimum. And we had 51% of our student EL population actually meet the target. So we exceeded, which was very exciting for us because, as I said, the sites have really focused on knowing who their students are and providing them with good first teaching and intervention as appropriate. As I said, the successes really were attributed by the teachers and the administration was the jumpstart to the school year. The very targeted, focused professional development that gave us a common language across the district to focus in on how to work with English learners, strategic instructional strategies such as direct teaching, checking for understanding, and thinking maps, so that because we do have students that change between schools, it didn't matter if you were at California one day, Monta Vista the next day, and then as a sixth grade student then maybe went to Edgewood or Walnut Grove, or Holland Crest. So it really gave a student, no matter where they were at, to continue their education with minimal interruption. As I said also, the East LA Classic, we currently have a section at California. And it's very exciting. I've gone to observe, and you have English learners who would just sit very passively and quietly in their classroom. And I tend to call them the bobbleheads. They just try to move their head. So if you want a yes, it looks like a yes. Or if you want a no, it might have looked like a no. And it really forced them to kind of come out of their shell. And within a couple days, the teachers in their regular home were like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe how verbal they are and how much more willing they're to have a risk and to even write and to communicate. So they felt very empowered. Last year was the first session at the high school, same response, and we will have two summer session programs for our high school students as well. So it gives them another avenue to actually in kind of reality-based situations for them to practice the reading, the writing, the listening, and speaking of the English language. And then, of course, is that constant monitoring of the student data, understanding where every student is performing. So in summary, what we're here for and what I'm very happy to share with you is that we have met the target for AMAO1, and that is official. That's that one band a year. We have met AMAO2, which is achieving English proficiency in a timely manner. And we are estimated to meet the AMAO3 proficiency on CST for English, Language, Arts, and Math. That is officially released in the fall. Based on our estimates, we are going to make it, but I cannot make that announcement that it comes from the state. So I'm, once again, pleased to share that information with you, and thank you.
Does anyone have questions? Ms. Shoemaker? Mr. Cox?
Yeah. You mentioned that in the Wesco being a primary center, we have obviously significantly more. Do we generally get many that come in at the middle school age or even high school with being not proficient?
Obviously we don't have the rate as the younger students that come in, sure. But at the middle school and high school we do. We have students that come from out of the country, yeah, that have never spoken English before. Mm-hmm. Our Chinese population seems to be growing, okay, a little more than it has in the past, and we've had people coming in from, you know, other countries. And so it hits the high school and middle school differently, because it's much different when you're teaching students colors and basic shapes and numbers when they walk into the middle school and have to know algebra. So you'll see, you have it, but it's just a different type of student.
Okay. Because obviously, I mean, we don't have, you know, AP classes or those kinds of things at the high school that are in, you know, taught in English language. Is that true that we don't? Do we provide English language learners with advanced placement opportunities?
Oh, absolutely.
We do.
If it's appropriate for their education, they absolutely have full access. Okay. And we do have students in AP classes that are second language learners.
But do we have them in that, what would you call that, band two, where they've been in the program for over 5 years and continuing on?
We are required by law to provide them with English language development so that they learn the English language, but where you provide that service can be in a variety of different situations. So if having AP art history is the best placement for that student, they are absolutely given full access to that, and they would receive their services maybe through their English class.
And how... That's a good thing.
Very good.
It's a good thing, but also does it hamper their incentive to transition into fluency?
The California English Language Development Test, while if you look at it at the surface, you'll think, oh, it's quite an easy test, you know, but it's not an easy test. Mm-hmm. And so you might have a strength of area and do very well, and there might be an area that may not be as proficient for a student, such as writing, which would prevent them from exiting from the program, but they're still able to do the work. Let's put it this way. If we had every kindergarten student take the test, we would probably have about an 80% EL rate. It's just a very demanding test to be able to demonstrate your proficiency in English, mm-hmm. which I am not doing at the moment with my...
Obviously, the CELT scores are not the only
criteria.
What other, in order of importance, do we?
Correct. There's three sets of criteria. The first one is the CELT. You must be early advanced or advanced on that.
Okay.
The second is the CST test, the standardized test, you must be a minimum of a 300.
Okay.
Which is basic. Then after that, we look at grades and teacher input. Sometimes it will be the CST that prevents a student. Correct.
Two-thirds is objective evaluation. It's a result on a test. Test scores.
Correct.
And then roughly a third.
Would be teacher.
Teacher.
Or a review team in reviewing the student performance.
But if the CST scores aren't there, there's no way to
there's no option.
Transition.
And that's because of Ed Code.
Ed Code.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Ms. Poulos. On page 4 of the handout, the slides aren't numbered, but it says AMAO1, and then target of 56, and then it looks like Merlinda has a little teeny white...
They had 1% the previous year.
And so they made great strides, but they don't have the East LA Classics.
Correct.
What were they doing to make such wonderful progress in that year?
Many things. One of them is, as I said, all the schools basically said the Jumpstart was a huge impact. We did a lot of in-service with principals as well as teachers to help understand what is on the CELT. Any of you that take a test, you want to know what's going to be on
right.
the test. Some of the teachers, because of the nature of how the test is administered, knew that it was reading, writing, listening, and speaking, but they had not really seen sample questions, so we had found a vendor that had some things for them to be able to prepare and look at, so the students were prepared as well as they understood exactly how to help lead the students to answer the questions, or to be kind of that test readiness to understand this, what was going to come before them.
So nothing special happened at Merlinda, because you did that with all of the students. And I mean, with all the teachers in the district, or only the teachers at Merlinda?
All the teachers got that. Then Merlinda, I'd have to look specifically, and I can ask the school. But I do know, intervention for their students. Merlinda, when they saw their data from the previous year, obviously were very concerned. So I know they did things as a site. To look at data and track the students and monitor the students. Because the data is compiled as a district, even though I can give it to you as a school site, it's not looked by anyone else other than ourselves by school site. It's only looked as a comp. So when we started breaking down that data, it really became apparent as, oh, maybe we're not watching as closely. Because of when the test is given, it's given at the beginning of the year. You don't get your data until the end of January, February.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of technical things that kind of go in there. So I know the schools really took great care, and not just Merlinda, but all of them, to say, how are we monitoring and tracking this in between? Mm-hmm. Where are they right now? So when you think that you start school, the last data point you have is in January. Obviously, they've had a year of education. They're going to take the test, but they're not going to find out. They took some internal steps to make sure that they were finding other ways to see how the students were progressing. So we kind of took it upon ourselves to find a better way than relying on the state's information.
Thank you.
Mr. Spence?
You used, talk about AP classes and languages that are used. You know, obviously it would be difficult to provide AP classes for all the languages that are represented in West Covina Unified.
Correct.
Right, so it would only be those where there were enough.
They would have to have enough English, what we considered proficient, to the level of, do you need primary language support, or fluent enough to understand and participate in the class?
And I have a question about that, but first, I mean, when we talk about these AP classes, you use the art history example. I mean, is that really what students, that, or is it AP Spanish, or is it AP Mandarin Chinese that they're participating in the AP program?
I would have to look. It was either AP, I don't know if they have the art history class or it's a history class, but we did have a student in that situation.
A student, yeah.
That I can think of specifically, because any time that you take a student out of their ELD class, they usually come through me just to verify that they're in compliance, that they're not doing anything that would jeopardize some kind of standing in the district with courses or compliance and such.
Because I think, I mean, that's a fundamental difference when you say, are they in AP classes, and if they're in AP, their native language, and AP something else.
Correct, and we do have that in Spanish. And correct.
So, yeah.
And some of them absolutely take advantage of that.
Oh, I would too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But
I agree.
So, I would like to know, like, what those other classes are. I mean, if there's only one.
We can get a breakdown of the English learners and if they're what AP classes they're currently in.
And on the issue of primary support, since we don't provide primary support for many of the languages where there's a student here or there in West Covina Unified, is there a difference in the redesignation rates between students that have primary support and those that don't?
Well, I'd have to look at that data, but I want to clarify. When you say primary language support, all students are given primary language support. But if you're talking about an instructional aid, would be different than correct. I mean, we provide dictionaries and online resources and such.
Right, but you don't have aids for all the
correct. Yeah. I would have to look at that data to see if there's a different trend. Nothing that I can recall stands out as being that there is an anomaly that somebody else is not progressing as.
You know, one, if there is no difference between, you know, providing instructional aids and, you know, that would be weird to me. And if there is a difference, I want to know what it is.
Right. Our other languages are often very few, one or two, and the students don't always stay with us throughout their career. So I would just have to look for that data.
I mean, that's the same with the other students, too.
Right, and see how we could pull it for you.
Okay. Because that would be, I think, valuable. Now, what's the difference in the funding when a student gets redesignated? It costs we lose money.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. And I know that's one of those perverse, weird ways where success is actually not encouraged from a financial reward system, because the longer someone's in the program, the more money the district gets.
Correct. Although there are requirements of what services we have to provide. And the kind of credentialing and services, things that we have to have. So there are things that come through the general fund, and sometimes if you really cost analysis, I know we were talking with Bonita, they say they put actually more into their English learners from general fund than they even do that. So to answer that I wouldn't be able to say correct. But yes, you're right. In theory, if you ask, I mean, what we're looking is to put ourselves out of a job in the Title III.
Right, yeah, exactly. And especially since there are a lot of, you know, native English speakers that couldn't meet our standard.
Correct.
Destination anyway, so it makes sense we'd be spending a lot of general fund money.
Correct.
But I guess, you know, that's why, how does our redesignation rate compare to other districts in our similar one? Like when we compare, you know, when we get the API rankings, it'll say you're a 10 out of 10 or in your area. So how are we on our redesignation rates with like schools?
I would have to look to see with the new release of how this is going to look. I can't say out of the program improvement status, and I would have to go back to the numbers, but it's roughly 85% of LA County is in a EL status for program improvement. And so I would say we're probably, at this point, performing much better because most of them are falling in. We're actually going to hopefully, if we sustain this, exit out.
Okay. I would like to see how we compare to like districts like we would do the API and stuff, because that would give me a good benchmark. Because I, you know, believe me, I talk about this stuff, this issue, and I was told, oh, we're doing great, we're doing great, we're doing great. Stop asking, well, how come we're not doing it faster? You know, I'd like to see that.
Right. The data is just becoming available, so it might take us a little bit of time. Our data, part of that, because we get it, I'd have to look at when the other district's information is being released publicly on the CDE. But there is new data coming out published to the CDE, and I don't know the date, if that's actually been released or if it's in the next couple weeks.
So I'd like to see that.
Okay.
And the last kind of question I guess I have is deals with Proposition 227, and its, I guess, implementation into these programs. You know, have we ever had a request for a parent waiver? Or how does all the 227
stuff
work? In the
5 years since I have been in my position, we have not had a request. Each school has there is a form to be completed. We do maintain a list for a waiting list if we should have one, but it has remained blank. We just don't have the population here that has had that. At one time, it was my understanding that there was the dual immersion at Orangewood, in which when that first transitioned, there was parents that had at one time had that request, but it, I wasn't in the district at that time, so in my almost 9 years.
I know,
it's not been.
You're a newbie.
Yeah, I know.
No, so, but, you know, and also, you know, at one point we participated in 227 classes that were paid for out of the general fund for parents of.
The CBET?
Yeah, of parents. Well, English classes for parents.
Correct.
Of students that were in ELL programs. But we don't do that anymore.
Well, that's the CBET program. That was Tier 3 money. We had a parents or two that would attend, but we could not sustain the enrollment, so at this time we have not had the class. We refer them to Covina Valley Tri-Community, who still has an ESL program, because we were spending much more on the program than pulling in participants. Obviously we had the desire and the strength of a needed of a program, we could rejuvenate.
I would assume, I'm not sure, but I would assume that, you know, obviously if parents were learning English at the same time students were learning English, you know, that would be beneficial for, you know, for both.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Do they have to pay the fees at Tri-Community? How does that work? Because here there wouldn't have been a fee for them to be in the English class. But
I would
Tri-Community, I know that the prices have just gone up.
Correct. The ESL classes, and I don't know how those programs specifically run. I know things like through ROP and some of those things, there's financial consideration for families who do qualify. But since it's not our run program, I couldn't specifically answer that.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you so much. We appreciate the report. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Thank you, Ms. Valentine. Okay, item number 12, Mr. Spence.
Yes, I pulled this item because I had a question about the information that we'll get concerning the actuarial study. And, you know, it talks about the projected annual pay-as-you-go, recommended level of annual funding amounts to pre-fund the obligations as a flat dollar amount. I mean, the first time that we had to do this, we finally got it, you know, there was a question about how much do you put in, you know, to fund it. And are they, when they say they're going to give us a recommended level, are we going to have information like, okay, but if you put an X amount, then that means your annual contribution, you know, down the line is going to be much lower because you pre-funded so much of it. Are those options going to be part of that? Because that's not kind of how I looked at this when I was reading what the scope of work was. Mr. Simmons. Question.
Mrs. Basson, if you could answer that for him, please.
I don't think this includes something variables, but if you put the flat funding, how much would it require now to fund it for the future, or if you had to pay as you go. So you see, there isn't considered in this study, you know, variable amounts that we would put in and see what that would be, if I'm understanding your question.
Yeah, and that is kind of what I'm looking at, because if you look at that and you say, well, look, you know, if you just put in 50 grand or 100 grand now, that means down the line, you know, that saves the district X amount of money over time. And so, you know, I'd like to kind of have that kind of information from to see, at least know what our options are. So if we have some kind of ending fund balance in something else that we could, you know, prepay down that, then it's not a burden for future years as we go on through this, through the process, rather than, you know, kind of, you know, barely making it so that, but in the end, that costs the district more money. I understand, you know, cash flow may make us a little better, but it costs the district a lot more money and takes a lot more money from other programs that fund these things.
I'm sure they can do that. We would just have to tell them how much we would want to put in, or some percentage if you wanted to contribute something so it cut the payments in half. There'd have to be some criteria that we would provide.
Something like that. Like if it cut it, you know, I mean, it's hard to say because I don't know what the payments are, you know, is it, you know, that they're talking about, so I don't know.
What I can do is bring back to the board on the Friday update what the last study was so you can see that. And then that could give you some basis.
I don't know if it was in the last one, but it was in the first one. I don't know if it was the last one, but yeah, some kind of variable. I mean, even in, just pick one, you know, 50% or something like that.
Isn't that bullet number four sort of what
you're looking for? Well, that's the recommended level. That's a level annual funding.
And
but
to prefund the obligations as a flat dollar amount, a cost of percent increase each year, or a level percent of unfunded liability.
Right, but they're only going to give us one. That's my understanding. They're only going to give us one number.
A level percentage. So if you wanted to contribute 10%.
Yeah, they're not going to, they're going to say if you want to do 10, this is what it is. See, I want to kind of know like this is 10, this is 25, this is 50.
You're trying to think about kind of like buying down our payments, future payments.
Correct.
So
yeah.
If we did a lump sum additional of $50,000 towards this, what would our future
payments be? Yeah, not only what the future payments are, but does that save the district over time $200,000, you know, that we're not taking out of student programs over a certain amount of time. So that's kind of. So, like, if it's 10, you know, some kind of benchmarks. I guess I don't necessarily care which ones, but, like, 3 or, you know, something like that.
Or we can say you wanted your payments to only be X number of dollars.
Yeah, it's hard to say without knowing what those are.
Kind of going backwards.
Yeah.
So I could get the previous study, share, you know, in a Friday update, and get more direction before we move forward with exactly the scope.
Okay. Well, I didn't plan on, like, the cabling or anything like that. That's just the kind of information I don't know.
That you want. Okay.
You do think they wouldn't do that? They wouldn't be able to run those three numbers? Like, pick 25%?
I think you were clear on what you're asking for, so I don't.
I'm not clear?
No, I said I think you're clear, so I think we need, like, a Friday update and then to discuss it later.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't necessarily want to postpone that. I might just kind of, like, pick three numbers, and I'll be able to tell, you know. That's
so
what I'm talking
about. Three particular numbers in mind. I want to make
Well,
sure
not like one, two, three, but, like, you know, 30%. You know, or I don't know what number 25. Do we have any CPAs on the board that would know anything?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, that might be helpful if there's someone with some financial expertise other than me that would chime in on this. But, you know, something that's 25.
That's assuming you are in half.
But Mr. Merriman lives in Pomona. So it's 25 or, you know, 40 or, you know, something like that. Just pick whatever you think.
Just so I'm clear, so some percentage where you want us to contribute to buy down the future.
If we had a one-time lump money of this in this year, how much would that buy over, you know, just, see, not knowing what the payments are per month, it's hard for me to say what that is. So I'm looking at, you know, percentage-wise, I guess, some kind of, we had an extra $100,000 or, see, I don't even know, since I don't know the full amount of our liability, it's hard for me to say, is $100,000 nothing or is it $1 million that we're talking about? But, you know, some kind of extra payment, what does that mean?
Okay.
You know, a couple options on that.
That's
but without knowing, having numbers here of, you know, what our liabilities are, it's hard for me to say if 100 is too much or not, you know, I can't say.
Ms. Poulos.
Would that not cost us more than the $5,000? Could they still keep it at the $5,000 that we needed to pay if we're asking for additional information?
We can ask. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think we could approve this and ask that. And, you know, obviously they'll be so happy that they got this contract the way the economy is going. They'll add those three extra math things to the Excel spreadsheet and give that to us. I'm sure they'll be very happy.
Maybe.
Thank you. Okay. Do we have who will go ahead
and move
this?
I'll move it.
Thank you. Mr. Spence, who will second it? Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. Okay, it was moved by Mr. Mike Spence. It was seconded by Jessica Shoemaker to authorize a consultant services agreement between Dempsey, Fillinger, and Associates in the West Covina Unified School District, further to authorize budget transfers, purchase orders, and warrant release in support of this agreement. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? It is carried 5-0. It's we are to the Board of Education discussion. Mr. Cox, would you like to share something since we're to that part? No? You sure? Yeah? Okay. Okay. Anybody else on the board have anything that they would like to discuss? All right. Dates to remember. March 5th is our special education meeting here at the district, and March 13th is our next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of February 28th, 2012 is adjourned at 7:57.